I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au. So, Lynn, what's on the show today?
Well, Phil, we're going to be chatting to Max at the Gilgandra Rural Museum.
Okay. Now, straight after that, I'm going to be talking with Barry Bremner. Now, Barry was on our program last week, and he's wrote two fantastic books. One was called Workers on the Wallaby, and the other one is Work About Australia. Now, we did Work About Australia last week.
Yes, that's correct.
And this week, we are talking with Barry all about Workers on the Wallaby. And for two lucky winners, now listen here, listeners, if you give me a call after the discussion with Barry, you can ring me on 1300 494 988. So get your pencil and paper out, 1300 494 988. It's a free call. Ring me straight after the discussion with Barry, and first two lucky people are going to win a copy of Workers on the Wallaby.
Oh, wow, that's good.
That's very good, courtesy of Barry himself. Now, straight after that, I think I'm talking to David Martina again.
Yes,
where are they now?
We're catching up with them again.
Yes.
Now, they've been to the Bundaberg Brewery.
The distillery.
1770, Bayfield National Park, Five Rocks and Finchatten. So they've certainly been about.
Well, they're doing the big lap, you see.
Yes, I know. Lucky things.
Lucky couple.
Especially at this time.
Look, they've found some sunshine finally. Okay, they're up there. Bundaberg, good luck to them. And they're doing a big lap in their 78 Series Troopy.
Yes.
So it's going to be amazing to catch up with David Martina again. And, of course, listeners, don't forget, as well as all of that, a great selection of Aussie music as selected by the people we interview. So what do you think, Lynn?
On with the show.
Hello, listeners. Phil C here with Lynn, and we're at Gilgandra, and we are at the
Gilgandra
Museum. All right.
Okay, and I'm with Max. How are you today, Max?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time. So can you tell us a little bit about the Gilgandra Museum?
The Gilgandra Museum originally started quite a long time ago, but then it came into this building here, or that building there, in 1996, and it was opened, and it's been extended three times to fit things in, and there's many more things that could come in that relate to the Gilgandra area that aren't in there. Probably with a little bit of reorganisation we can add more to it, but it's certainly a very interesting museum. The cross section, we've got very rare tractors in there. We've got a printing press from down the street here, the old lead, I forget what you call it, but anyway, everything was made with lead before they printed.
Right.
There's an old telephone exchange with the cords on it, where when you rang in you put the cord in.
Yes.
There's many, many telephones. It's great to get children in here because they, how do you operate that phone?
Yeah. Exactly. And how do I get YouTube on that?
Yeah, exactly. It's a wonderful education. Then to see the buggies and the horses, there's actually solid horses being bought to put in front of the buggies. There's another one in a sloping thing that the horse walks all the time, and that drives the cleaning machine to clean wheat. Grains. This, look, it just goes on and on what you can see here.
A lot of things that, you know, children now would not know about, like, as you said, the telephones. And I did hear that there was an old cooktop in there, a wood-fired stove and everything else. So
there is.
Yes.
The old chip heaters for heating the water before to put in the bathtub.
Yeah. No, that, yes.
You know, they're here and they're set up in the room just down the side there. And it's set up as a little hospital there. There's actually an old birthing bed in there from the days. And a lot of the tools and equipment that the doctors used in the earlier day. Then you go around a little bit further and there's a school that's been brought in from out near Turrawina. Built many, many years ago. It's got the old long desks in there. And the
inkwells
is where you put pens on the front of it.
I remember those desks from... Yeah. Yes. That's going back a little bit.
My very word it is. When you go on a... Sorry.
No, you're right. Keep going, Max.
Go on a little bit further and, you know, we had a dairy here owned by the Hargraves brothers and a lot of their equipment is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, supplied Gilgandra with all the milk and so forth. And then there's many ale machines and then you come around into the main museum that we've been talking about.
Right. And I noticed out the front you've got windmills as well that are powering...
the kangaroo and Ned Kelly.
Yes, that's very clever.
Very clever. Who thought of that, Max?
It's a chap that lived out at Turrawena and in fact, he even built the observatory that's down here. Very clever farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And he and my dad did a lot of work here together.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They just suited each other and they certainly did a lot of work here. But that Howard Rotary Hoe out there, my great uncle was the man that built the first one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Cliff Howard.
Oh, okay.
My mother was a Howard and her father's brother was Cliff Howard.
So you've been in this area for quite a while then, obviously.
The longest I've been away from Gilgandra is 6 weeks.
Really?
So you were born in Gilgandra, mate?
Yes.
And lived here all your life with the exception of 6 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And also, too, I noticed that you've got a couple of posters with regards to the Kooee March, which Gilgandra's famous for.
Exactly.
Back in 1915, I think it was, where 35 soldiers
finished
started.
Up in Sydney. 26 left here.
Yeah, 26.
But then they kept joining them as they went down.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Some of them went to the ball the night before they left, and they thought, oh, we're going to join this. So they went home, got their gear, and caught up with them. Yep. Out along the road somewhere.
Oh, right.
And once again, Cliff Howard's and my grandfather's brother was finished up marching with them in Sydney.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes. That what you're pointing out there now is that they were raising money to build a hospital here in Gilgandra.
Right. Yeah.
And they, if you wrote on there, put your name on there, it cost you sixpence.
Oh, right. Okay.
In other words, 5 cents these days.
Yeah.
And then a lady crocheted the whole lot. Do you call it crochet?
Oh.
Anyway, she stitched the whole lot.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, embroidery.
Embroidered, that's the word.
So it's an embroidered, I guess it's a sheet or a blanket, isn't it?
It's a sheet.
It's the size of a bed sheet.
Yes.
Wow.
And if you could only get all the names, you'd know how many sixpences they raised. But
wow.
That was a minimum.
That's
and then
impressive.
Next to that, you can see the... Yeah. Lloyd Middleton thing there. He went to school in Gilgandra here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And not long. But, you know, we've had quite a few people go to war from here.
Yes.
And, you know, away from here, there's a lot of other things that you can visit in Gilgandra.
There is, right? Okay.
What would you suggest, Max?
Yes.
Well, for our listeners.
It's regarded as the town of windmills.
Yes.
And we're known for the windmills, and you understand a windmill is designed to bring up the sub-artesian water.
Correct, yes.
So before a town water system was here, we had, they drew either rainwater tank or bore water.
Right.
And then down along the road there, well, it's actually the windmill walk, goes from the Kooee Heritage Centre right down to the main street along the riverbank.
Mm-hmm.
We did notice that.
And then we've got the cactus world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about down along this road. That's the biggest collection of cacti in, I think, the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh, wow.
Okay. He exports cactuses all over the world.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then you go down further and the observatory, unfortunately, we're talking about the chap that worked up here. He built that.
Right.
But it's not open anymore.
No.
Hopefully someway someone will come along
and open it.
And then you've got the main street. There's lots of other things to see in Gilgandra, the sites of the old sawmill. We had three sawmills once upon a time. A flour mill, which closed down and then burnt in the later years. And let me think, out on a road, we've got what's called a corduroy road.
Right.
Do you understand a corduroy road?
No.
Well, not at all.
It travels from the village Kirbin west. And in the days of the Cobb and Co. coaches on the Black Soil Plains,
right,
when it got wet,
yes,
the coaches would bob.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So they cut and laid white cypress trees side by side for miles.
Oh, okay. So that the coach could go across.
So the coach wouldn't bob.
Oh, wow.
And used only in the wet time, of course, mm-hmm. because it was quite rough. But it got through.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, another experience we had, we've got the opposite, just up here where the grain receival businesses are. We had a corduroy road there because it was raw sand and the wagons loaded with goods would bog in the raw sand. We went to the opposite.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Because it was too dry.
Yes.
Yep.
You laid a corduroy road there.
Oh. So that's probably where the name for corduroy fabric came from, is it?
Could have been. Could have very easily been.
Well, there you go.
I don't know the answer. We've got a what's called the Berrida Wool Shed.
Yes.
That you can ring up and make an appointment, go out and see the old shed, very old.
Mm-hmm.
There are photos of it here somewhere. I just can't see one quickly. Mm. But Gilgandra's is an old area, although we're not the first town settled on the Castlereagh River. Mindurin was.
Okay.
Oh, right.
And then even this little village I talked about, Kirban, was settled before Gilgandra.
Mm. Okay.
But then we're known for mixed farming.
Yes.
You know, grains,
yep.
Sheep, cattle.
Cattle, yeah.
Goats are coming in now.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yep.
And I don't know. There's a lot of other things you can see.
So if someone was to come to the museum, how long would they need to take?
Well, some people go through in 15 minutes. Yep. Other people go through in 3 hours. It depends how you want to study, because a lot of the things have a little...
A story to them
that you mm-hmm. can go and stand there and read.
Yep.
Okay.
And very interesting
to
read all that. And you'll see the names of the people in the Gilgandra area. And as far as Walgett, that sort of thing, that they've donated things to the museum so that people can see them.
All right. Well, that sounds very fascinating, Max. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell us all about the museum. Now, we're going to play an Aussie song for you. Who would you like us to play?
Oh, let's have the Seekers.
Yes.
And the Carnival is Over.
Okay. I'm sure Phil will have that.
Absolutely, Len. I can do that. The Seekers, the Carnival is Over. Max, thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been really great for us to be here. And I hope lots of listeners come through. When they come in through the area, they pop in and see you.
Yes, well, we do too. It's a very interesting town.
Yes.
We're known as a friendly town.
Yes.
So, been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, there are several free camps in Gilgandra, aren't there, for overnight stay?
Yes. Yes, well, the council will actually be developing one between the museum here and the Kiwi Heritage Centre.
Okay,
there'll
fantastic.
Be 10 sites there.
Fantastic.
There. You know, no services provided.
No.
Okay.
But this free camp is just across the road at the
Sporties
or the bowling club there.
Mm-hmm. That.
And then there's another one up at the Railway Hotel.
Yes.
And down the main street, the Royal Hotel. There's a small area there where people can free camp.
So you're going to be a very RV friendly town.
Well, I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because you'll get more people here.
I've got a... my wife and I have a caravan, and we headed out last year for a 10-week trip that lasted 5 days.
Know the feeling.
We got to the South Australian border, and that was it.
Happened to us.
Okay, then.
Thank you so much for your time. Now, stick around, listeners, for more of Roman Oz straight after the carnival is over.
Sweet. this will be our last goodbye. Though the carnival is over, I will love you till I die. Like a drum, my heart was beating, and your kiss was sweet as wine. But the joy
remember from last week we had a very special guest on the phone, Mr. Barry Brebner, and he was talking us through his Work About Australia book, a fantastic book for anybody travelling this great country of ours. And what a way to travel Australia, pick up some jobs and get some money along the way. Now, he's come back with us this week. He's graced us with some of his time, and I know he's an extremely busy man. He's going to talk all about his second book, Workers on the Wallaby. How are you today, Barry?
G'day, mate. Great to catch up with you again.
Absolutely fantastic, mate. Welcome to the program, and thank you so much for gracing us with some of your time. I know you're an extremely busy fellow, and it's always good to talk to you, my friend. How's it all going in Dubbo? What's it like in Dubbo?
Oh, it's not too bad, mate. We've had adequate rain. I think the rural community's pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, we're poking along pretty well, and the place is busy actually.
Yes.
And locally, there's a lot of work about.
Fantastic.
Which is great.
Like your book says, Work About Australia. And so there's work in Dubbo as well.
I think about that, mate.
Yep.
People say how hard it is to get a job sometimes in the media and that sort of thing. But I look at we've got industries here in Dubbo, the building industry, the abattoirs. They're crying out for people all the time.
Okay.
Unbelievable. Right.
Fantastic. Well, for the benefit of my listeners from last week, they would have heard about you talking about Work About Australia. Now you're going to tell us all about your second book, Workers on the Wallaby, a swag of stories, a collection of travellers' tales. Tell us all about this one, Barry.
Well, Phil, when I finished up with Work About Australia in 2011,
right?
My wife and I were going to just enjoy our retirement.
Okay.
Unfortunately, in 2013, I got quite ill. I suffered from cancer.
Okay.
And we had to move to Sydney for treatment and that sort of thing. And when I came out of that and got into, back into feeling okay, I felt I had a lot of stories to tell.
Right.
And in my recuperation time, I sat down and wrote Workers on the Wallaby.
Okay.
I've got to tell you where I got the name from.
Yes.
I listened to Macca, Australia All Over.
Uh-huh.
When I had Work About Australia, Macca interviewed me probably half a dozen times over the years about, jobs and where they were and what have you.
Right.
And he's always using the term on the wallaby.
Okay.
And I thought, right, that's where I'll put my book, Workers on the Wallaby, and I'll write stories about people I met during my Work About Australia years.
Okay.
And, mate, as it developed, I got the people to send me their photos, which are included in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I started one by one, and I picked out a variety of people, so that they're not all similar, if you know what I mean.
Yes, of course, yes.
And you know, now I look back thinking about it, talking with you today, you know, the stories that involve, you know, one of the stories, A Journey to Another World, for instance.
Okay.
Written by two people, by myself, but about Peter and Jan Kruger.
Right.
And they left home with their two small children.
Right.
And I looked at the development. They were away for quite a number of years, and they ended up with Catherine. And I called, Colleen and I called in there and stayed with them for a while they were working in Catherine. They bought a property just out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of Workabout Australia members did that, and that's what the club did. You know, they right. stuck together and talked to each other and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But I've looked now, this is many, many years ago, and their children are both up and running. They're doing well. And it was an educational thing for their children to travel Australia for so many years, do their education by homeschooling, and learn about our great country.
Okay.
And, you know, they've gone on to bigger and better things. So, you know, that was just one story.
Yes.
What about a veterinarian of many, many years
mm-hmm.
who wanted to hit the road and, you know, follow their dream? They'd always wanted to, you know, travel and work.
Yes.
And he ended up getting jobs on properties as the vet. He ended up doing some, you know, relief work when the vet knew he was there. They went away for a week's holiday and he did the replacement. You know what I mean?
Yep. Indeed.
And so they were the different one. I've got a tradesman, you know, who's been on the road for many years. As a matter of fact, he was in Dubbo recently. I went and had a beer with him at the local.
Oh, wow. So he's in your book, and then you had a beer with him, and this book was written a long time ago.
This book was written 2000 and when? It'd be 10 years, 10
yep.
years or so, not quite yet.
Yes.
And, I keep in touch with all of these people, Phil.
Yes.
As I do with many Workabout Australia club members who now still belong to Workabout Australia,
okay.
even though I'm not involved.
Yes.
But there is a movement of, like, a friendship out there.
Okay.
It's a culture of people who, some people travel together.
That's
you
true.
Know?
That's
and,
true.
I mean, I still keep in touch with a couple who came here from New Zealand. And their story was from New Zealand to the Alice.
Okay.
And it was, they got into Australia and they went to the Brisbane Caravan Show.
Right.
And they came to one of my seminars. They joined Workabout Australia.
Okay.
And when I look back on their work,
yep.
You know, what they did, they got a job on in a caravan park. I think it was Goondiwindi.
Okay.
He worked as a truck driver in other areas.
Okay.
And, you know, and ended up in Alice Springs. They've now gone back to New Zealand.
Oh, but, okay.
They're back in New Zealand, and okay. I have spoken to them, you know, a number of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I give them a call or they give me a call and just say hello.
Yep. I'm just looking at that now in your book. That'd be Warren and Karen Blue.
Is that them?
That's
yeah.
them from New Zealand. From New Zealand to the Alice.
New Zealand to the Alice. Can I tell you a funny aspect of that story?
Sure, absolutely.
When they registered at the Brisbane Caravan Show, she filled out the membership form, and she put her name down, Karen Blue.
Okay.
And I said, "What, Karen Blue?"
Yep.
My daughter, a bit younger than me.
Okay.
She married a Don Blue
right.
from New Zealand.
Okay.
And it turned out that Warren and Don were cousins.
Right.
And
wow.
they hadn't like Don's been in Australia for many, many years
mm-hmm.
and met my daughter in Adelaide, as a matter of fact, and then they got married and they now live in Queensland. But they joined and her name was Karen Blue, the same as my daughter.
Right. Amazing. What are the chances?
You wouldn't believe it, would you?
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think this is a fascinating book. You've got about 11 or 12 groups of people you've written about. Helen and Greg and Karen and Warren and Lindsay, Livingston.
The other interesting one is A Road to a Dream.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about that one.
That's very interesting because it's a woman on her own whose children had left the nest.
Okay.
And she wanted to travel and work.
Okay.
And she did. She had one of those, accommodation vans. What do you call them? Camper vans.
Camper van.
Yeah. And she headed off. And mm-hmm. her story is fascinating.
Okay.
She met some great people, saw some great things, and I still communicate with her as well.
Okay.
And, all of these people are just, they've got a story to tell, and hopefully I've been able to tell it in Workers on the Wallaby.
Look, it's a great-looking book. There's lots of really lovely photographs in here as well. I'm just looking at one here, Camels on the Trek to the Barossa Valley, and some fantastic photographs. And I'm sure my listeners are going to love this. I'm going to give away a couple of copies of this, Barry, to some of my listeners.
That'd be lovely.
I think I'm going to just say at the end of this segment, the first couple of people who call me up, they're going to win themselves a copy of Workers on the Wallaby, a swag full of stories. So many people like to read on the road. I found this. I've done an interview, or rather my partner did an interview with Carly Lane. She's a very famous author that lives up here. She's one of Australia's bestsellers. Right. And I guess people on the road have said to me, "Oh, you need to interview authors, you know, because we love to read. People love to read, and we interviewed Carly before. She writes novels, and this one here, A Swag Full of Stories. I think this is going to be a fascinating read for some for a couple of lucky winners. Is there any other interesting one in there, Barry? Before we wind this segment up.
Well, let me look. What about Hey, We've Done It?
Okay. Tell us a little bit about We've Done It.
Hey, We've Done It. I believe many people often think, gee, I wish we could work about Australia.
Yes.
You know, it's a dream a lot of people have.
Okay.
And that's what Greg and Helga Phillips had.
Okay.
They actually had, that dream to travel and work. And when they did it and we discussed it, I thought that was a great name. Hey, We've Done It.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is that I communicate with them a lot. They actually live at Greenvale.
Okay.
Where, you know, the Three Rivers.
Yes,
The song Three Rivers.
The Three Rivers Hotel.
Yep. And there's a photo in, I think it's in the book too, of the Three Rivers Hotel. And, I still communicate with them. But they're all great stories, mate. And the other interesting thing I'd like to just say is that because I'm on the radio today,
yes,
if people go on to workersonthewallaby.com,
yes,
and they go in and put in the word radio,
yes,
they'll be a book will be delivered to them for under $20.
Okay. All right. So if they don't win a free copy, they can buy a copy from you, because this one is still available in hard copy, Workers on the Wallaby, whereas the other one is not available in hard copy. But they can get that information from the one we discussed last week as Work About Australia. They can go on the website and find out all about that.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Whereas the other one's a hard copied book. They can actually purchase that.
They can purchase that, and if they put the word radio in,
yep,
there's a special discount area there because I was talking to you.
Okay.
I'll put that on the website. If they put radio in there, I'll deliver it to them for under $20.
Okay.
That includes postage.
Fantastic. Well, it's a big book, listeners. I've got to tell you, it probably costs you $10 to post the blessed thing.
it does, actually. It costs. That is exactly right. It costs just $9.80 or something to post.
Wow. Okay. So they're getting this incredible book for $10, and it's not a tiny little book. It's just like a 300-page book with fascinating stories, some incredible photographs, and I think it definitely would be a very interesting read for somebody sitting around having a cup of coffee alongside maybe the Murray or some other fantastic river, just kicking back and. Going through this incredible
book
and relax. Yep. Workers on the Wallaby. Barry, thank you so much for your time. Let's do that little plug again before we go. If they want to buy a hard copy, they go to
they go to workersonthewallaby.com.
Yep.
And make sure they put in the word radio in the discount section.
Okay.
Then we'll have the book in the mail to them the next day.
Okay, fantastic. Delivered to their door for $20, and $10 of that is postage, so they're getting the book for $10. Bucks. Mate, that's an incredible offer. Thank you so much for doing that for the listeners. And I am going to give away two copies to the first two lucky listeners who ring me up straight after your favourite song. What's your next favourite song for this segment there, Barry?
Oh, I've got to stick with Slim, mate, and we'll go Lights on the Hill.
Lights on the Hill for Slim Dusty. Barry, thank you so much. Barry Bremner, listeners, Workers of the Wallaby, and if you missed his discussion with me last week, Work About Australia. Fantastic discussion. Thank you so much for your time, Barry.
No worries, mate. All the best, and hope we catch up on the Wallaby.
We'll catch up on the Wallaby, my friend. As soon as COVID's relaxed and we're out and allowed to travel, I will catch up with you again, my friend. Thank you so much. Now, stick around, listeners.
Mate.
Slim Dusty's Lights on the Hill. The first two listeners gets a copy of Workers on the Wallaby.
Oh, yeah. It's a long, straight road and the engine is deep. I can't help thinking of a good night's sleep, and the long, long roads of my life are a-calling me. These rough old hands are a-glued to the wheel, my eyes full of sand from the way they feel, and the lights coming over the hill are a-blinding me. It's a long, tough haul from away down south. A man's gotta find a little bread for starting to pull. The gauge on the tank is a showing near full, and the lights coming over the hill are a-blinding me. There's rain on the road, I can feel the load start a-shifting in a dance. Too late I see the posts, and I haven't got a ghost of a chance. Oh no. The windscreen wipers are a-beating in time. The song they sing is a part of my mind, and I can't believe it's really happening to me. Oh, but I'm over the edge and down the mountainside. I know they'll tell about the night I died in the rain when the lights on the hill were a-blinding. I can feel the load start a-shifting in a dance. Too late to see the post, and I haven't got a ghost of a chance. Oh, 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 no. The windscreen wipers are a-beating in time. The song they sing is a part of my mind, and I can't believe it's really happening to me. Oh, but I'm over the edge and down the mountainside. I know they'll tell about the night I died in the rain when the lights on the hill were a-blinding me. In the rain when the lights on the hill were a-blinding me.
With overseas travel in lockdown, there's no better time to see what's offer in your own backyard. And if you want to do it in style, with all the bells and whistles, then 7th Street Caravans, located at 2212 Pacific Highway, Heatherbrae, is where the journey begins. Check out their range, Paramount, Silver Valley, Road Trip and Option RV. With dozens of layouts, there's something for everyone's needs. 7th Street also has a large range of pre-loved vans. They won't be beaten on price, so grab yourself a knockout deal today. Phone Aidan and the team on 4987 5288 or check out the website 7thstreetcaravans.com.
www.roamingaus.com.au.
Ah, well, hello, listeners. Phil C here, and this is Roaming Oz, and we've finally caught up with David and Martina again, the couple that's doing the big lap of Australia in their 78 Series Land Cruiser. How are you going, both of you guys?
Hello again, Phil.
Hello.
We're very good. How are you?
Mate, I'm having a ball, and I've got to tell you, I've been looking at some of your photographs and some of your Instagram posts. You guys are extremely adventurous. And I understand the last time we chatted, Martina had been to Byron Bay, and she wanted to sample some stuff in the brewery there. And as paying you back, because you were the driver, you were the designated driver in Byron Bay, you decided you were going to go to Bundaberg and have a crack at the Bundaberg distillery, and Martina was going to be driving you around and nursing your headache if you drank. Did you end up getting to the Bundaberg distillery?
Absolutely, yeah. Look, it's been on my to-do list for a very, very long time, you know. I mean, back in the younger years, I was always drinking Bundy on the weekends and whatnot, so the distillery was definitely on the to see and to do list. So once we got into Bundaberg, you know, you got the big bottle out the front of the distillery.
Absolutely.
So I got the good photo of giving the bottle a big hug and whatnot out the front. And we got inside, and they offer these tours through the actual distillery. So they show you the entire process through and explain how they where they get the molasses from, which is all local molasses, you know, to distilling the actual rum, which actually comes out clear as a white rum.
As a white
liquid. They said, don't panic, because, you know, that's the 8 years of aging in the barrels, you know, that gives it that nice golden colour that we all love.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very good to see, the whole process, the distilling process. You know, they told us about the barrels and whatnot inside, how they make them and who makes them. It's only actually two guys in Australia that make these barrels, and they're a father and son combo.
Right.
And then after that, you know, we had some tastings, which were one of the things I was very much looking forward to.
Okay. So you had a few tastings of the Bundaberg. So did you taste any of their liqueurs?
Yeah, we certainly did. Because with the tour, you get one spirit and one liqueur tasting.
Okay.
So, I had the Solera, I believe it's called. It's like the most expensive rum out of their range.
Okay.
And the coffee and chocolate liqueur. Now, Martina, you had the which one did you have?
Banana toffee,
yeah, and that was nice. Very good. Yeah. That was probably both of our favourite. Hey,
okay,
really nice.
But Martina, yeah. I thought you were supposed to be the driver. How did you manage to get a taste of the Bundaberg liqueur?
Yeah, because they only gave us one spirit and one liqueur.
Okay,
so that means we could drive still.
Okay.
So Dave got most of her spirit, and then she obviously drank the whole liqueur. She had a bit of a nip on the spirit.
Okay.
And because it was, I think it was a 40% rum, the Solera, so she had a bit of a nip to taste it. And I was quick to put my hand up to help her with the rest of it so she could still be right to drive.
Fair enough. So did you end up buying anything from there? Because I remember when I was there, I ended up buying some of their products, because not only do they sell rum, of course, but they've got other merchandise. I bought myself a really nice cap from there. So did you buy anything, or did you any liqueur or any rum after the tastings? Or did you
No,
just,
not really, no? To be honest. We've got a couple of little, you know, novelty things, sticker and keyring and whatnot, but we sort of tried to stick within our budget means,
yes,
you know, whilst we're going on this big trip and whatnot, and not working for however many months it will be. So no, look, we did the tastings, but we held ourselves back on spending too much money, because as you said, you know, there's a lot in that shop that you could buy, from hats to shirts, t-shirts, and you know,
absolutely,
you could buy the packs of all their liqueurs and rums and whatnot. So,
well, that's for the tourists, you see, and you're not a tourist, really, are you? Because you are doing this big lap,
right,
and you're doing it on, you're trying to do it on a budget. So, you would fully recommend the Bundaberg tour experience?
Absolutely, yeah. It was very, very well done. You know, the girls that did the actual tour,
yes,
hey, they were fun. They were very vibrant, very informative. They made the tour quite fun, didn't they? It was a good fun. The girls were singing here and there, and and, you know, cracking jokes and whatever. You get to taste the molasses, actually, and the molasses is sitting in these
huge room, essentially a concreted room, and you know, I can't remember how many liters fits in the thing, but it was just huge, and the molasses pumped in there. So yeah, we got what do they call the paddle pop sticks with the molasses, so you can taste it.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that part wasn't alcoholic.
Okay. Not all alcoholic, but a great experience nonetheless. Now, I understand from there, you guys went on to 1770 and Agnes Waters. I spent a couple of nights there.
Yeah, so we spent 2 days there, I think.
Yes.
And, yeah, we did just a couple of walks. We went to the James Cook Museum, and it's actually the last place where you can surf.
Okay.
But we didn't surf.
So Martina was shattered that she didn't have her surfboard with her.
Yeah, because David, he said we can't have so many toys with us.
David said we can only fit so much in the poor little troop carrier.
Yep. And so the surfboard wasn't part of the itinerary.
Unfortunately, not.
Can you hire the surfboards up there though, or not? I thought they did a few years ago when I was there. They were doing surf school and all sorts of things.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't know. I haven't seen any. I seen that they did kayaking sunset tour or something was really nice. I think.
Okay.
And then from there we went to Byfield National Park.
Oh well, we stayed in. It's in that free camp. At Urimela.
Park.
Oh, so that's a free camp, Urimela.
Yeah, it was a really nice one, actually, because you have to drive out of Agnes Waters and you drive sort of back out towards the main highway, and I think you drive about 10, 15 minutes and you turn right towards, there's a sign saying Urimela National Park, and you've got to obviously book online with these Queensland parks, like a camping permit and whatnot. It's only about $6.75 and whatnot. But it's a beautiful spot. It sort of almost faces west.
Mm-hmm.
So we had beautiful, absolutely stunning sunset photos. We had the troopy out on the sand, you know, with this old dried up tree, you know. I can send them through to you if you want to post them on the website.
Please do, yes.
Yeah, that was fantastic there. And not too many people. You've got toilets there. It's right on the beach. Great fishing from what the guys were saying that we met in the campsite. The fishing was, absolutely phenomenal.
Really nice drive from Agnes Water to this.
Yeah, it was a really nice drive through the bush there. You know, it was it sort of changed the Agnes Water to the Urimela National Park. It's sort of the scenery and the bush changed a little bit. And then when you popped out onto the sand, it was just, come out of nowhere, really. We were sort of in the thick bush, and then boom, it just opened up, and, it was beautiful.
So was there anything you needed to do, like, on that drive? Did you need to, deflate tyres or do anything, or was it just pretty easy going?
Well, this one was actually quite easy going. Okay. You know, even when you get to the beach, the camps where they're set up, they're just above the really soft sand, so in this part of the section, further down the trip, we sort of certainly did have to lower tyre pressures and be mindful of it. But this part, you know, if any of your listeners are heading into Urimela National Park, you don't have to worry. You can get in there with caravans and whatnot. There's room for tents and all these sort of things. But certainly just up the road where we ventured after that, which was through Byfield National Park.
Yes.
And further on, we had to be mindful of where our tyre pressures were, because you can certainly quickly become unstuck, stuck really, up to the axles.
Wow. Because I understand you went to Five Rocks as well, didn't you?
Yes. Well, Five Rocks is where the really soft sand is.
Definitely.
Following Byfield National Park, which was a stunning little national park there with emerald waters and whatnot, you could swim there, was Five Rocks. And Five Rocks really, when you're halfway down the track there, you really get into that soft sand and you realize pretty quickly that your tire pressures have to go down. Hey?
I think there is a sign even saying deflate your tires.
Yeah, there's a sign saying tire deflation bay, I think it was.
Oh, okay. So they've got an area where you can actually pull off the track to attend to your tyre pressures. Did you see anybody stuck? Did you see any cowboys who thought, I can get through here, I don't need to deflate the tyres?
Well, we saw a couple of people having a fair red-hot go, I think trying to avoid getting stuck, and they were using the mentality of just, pedal to the metal and hope for the best.
Yep.
So we didn't really see anybody stuck, but just going about things very, very rough for the poor, for their poor cars. So
we just
deflated our tyres down to about, you know, 16, 17 PSI.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have a problem, you know. We're running these Maxis all-terrain tyres.
Right.
And down at 16 PSI, mm-hmm. whether it was on Fraser Island or not, now Five Rocks, it's, you know, we didn't have a drama really getting in and out of anywhere.
So
we thought there was a couple of sections on Five Rocks that we were going to get, you know, not make it out that easy. So I sent Martina up there with a camera. And I said, oh, you got to video this because I reckon I'm going to get stuck. And, yeah, we popped out of everything, didn't we? Yeah.
So apart from deflating your tyres, I mean, you're in a 78 Series Land Cruiser, which is an incredibly capable vehicle, without a mm-hmm. doubt. Did you need to actually go into four-wheel drive, or were you able to do it purely by deflating your tyre pressures?
Well, funnily enough, on Fraser Island, you know, at our last episode, we spoke about Fraser Island, and, you know, I was saying that they've had quite a bit of rain. On Fraser Island, I think 75% of the time, I was in two-wheel drive.
Yes.
But at Five Rocks, no, you had to be in four-wheel drive. It was quite soft, and, no, I don't think I even came out of four-wheel drive because you could always hear the car, you know, really working and struggling through the soft stuff. So,
Yes, okay.
I would definitely suggest four-wheel drive and the lower tyre pressures. And then if people are on their own like us, we've always got the backup of the Maxtrax on the back as well.
Yep.
Just in case we get stuck. I mean, up there you've got plenty of trees. If you've got a winch, you know, you can pull yourself out. But
mm-hmm.
we found the Maxtrax, you know, that we haven't actually used them yet. But,
no.
We find, you know, looking at videos, how people are using them in the soft sand, they get you out quite easy.
I've got a set that sits on the top of my vehicle permanently, and the times that I've needed them has usually been for somebody else, but I've always carried them. I've had a lot of people there that have done the wrong things and wound up in trouble and grabbed my set of Maxtrax and gave them a bit of a pull out with the winch as well and the Maxtrax. So, look, you've got to actually really have these things on board, don't you? They're not just there for show. They're actually there to get you out of difficult situations or get people out of difficult situations. Like you said, if they don't want to deflate and have a red hot crack at it and go hard, apart from the fact that they could be damaging their car, they could also end up getting stuck.
That's right.
Yeah,
and you're better off having that bit of recovery gear with you and not having to use it rather than needing it and not having
it. Fantastic. Yeah, well, that's David. Fantastic advice. Fantastic advice. And for the listeners, now listen. This is coming from David and Martina, and they've done it. Okay, guys. If you are going to go to Five Rocks, don't think you're going to get through there if you're not in four-wheel drive and you don't deflate. Okay. Fully recommend that, David.
100% recommend that, and 100% recommend Five Rocks. It is a really nice spot. There's a nice camping area there with very clean toilets and cold showers. But, you know, when you're up this way and, you know, you're now sort of into the bit warmer months and whatnot, the cold shower is actually very welcoming and refreshing.
Yep. All right. Now, the last thing before we wind up, you went to Finch Hatton, is that correct?
Yeah, Finch Hatton. Well,
That was one of your favourites, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was my favourite.
So what was so special for you, Martina, about Finch Hatton?
It is because this place had so many gorges, so we could actually swim in and there was just fresh water.
Yep.
And also one of the sides had like platypus just swimming in the river.
Oh, wow.
Which was really nice to see.
Uh-huh.
And there was a really quirky campground, which is called, what was the name?
Platypus Campground or something it was called.
Yeah. And it was managed by this guy. Like, he was, I don't know if...
He was eccentric. He was quirky. He was out there. He looked like an older version of Malcolm Douglas.
His name was Waza.
I said, what's your actual name? He said, Waza. I said, all right.
Okay.
So when you're driving into Finch Hatton, he's maybe 10 kilometres from the actual walk, because when you get to Finch Hatton, Finch Haddon is actual town, little tiny township, but Finch Haddon Gorge is the one where you can walk. You walk out to it. It's only about maybe a 500, 600 metre walk to the first gorge, and you can swim in there. It's beautiful. You've got the waterfall coming down and a huge waterhole, and then you walk another maybe 600 metres up the hill.
Yes.
And you've got another even more stunning and picturesque waterfall and a bigger waterhole to swim in as well.
Yes.
But this fella was a, you know, like I just recommend people go there just to experience it. He bought this property, I think you said, what, 30 years ago? Yeah, I think 30 years ago. And it's right on the fringe of the actual rainforest, which is Finch Haddon Gorge.
Yes.
So his property, it's only, you know, 20 acres, but it's pretty much on the fringe of the rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
And he's built everything out of local timber.
Right.
So essentially the whole campground is set up like a treehouse style natural, you know, accommodation and whatnot.
The treehouse didn't have a wall.
Yeah, the treehouse don't have. Yeah, they haven't got walls, just the netting, you know, so mosquitoes don't get in.
And he has like bird living with him, like cockatoos.
Yeah, he's got birds, cockatoos living with him. He's got he's got his kelpie up there, and
so funny.
And you know, he's off the grid, so
and
it's all
to them.
Yeah, he talks to them like they're humans, you know, the birds, and they follow him and occasionally talk back, and I won't say, you know,
some of the words.
Yeah, some of the words that the birds say, but it's hilarious. He was certainly a character. Yeah, it was a lot of fun staying there, and he's so happy to show you around. And
there is the showers.
Yeah,
toilets.
Showers, toilets. There's a beautiful swimming hole that he's cleared out there. So
I think you can rent out the treehouse as well.
Yeah, you can hire the treehouses off him. So, you know, if you don't want to stay in the van, you can stay in the treehouses there and whatnot. But, yeah, the whole area was just beautiful, you know. When we sort of drove out there, we didn't know what to expect because you're driving through these beautiful cane fields and whatnot, and all of a sudden you're surrounded by this big mountain range, which is beautiful. It's like a horseshoe mountain range, and it's called the Pioneer Valley.
I think it was the like first taste of rainforest of Queensland for us.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, the first time we sort of saw a Queensland rainforest. And but the valley itself, which is the Pioneer Valley, you can drive up this windy road to the top of the range, and you look down, you look east towards Mackay, and it just took our breath away. We actually said, so far everything that we've seen on the way, this is certainly one spot we could see ourselves moving away from Victoria and to.
Wow. It's funny, like you have rainforest there, but there is a cattle stations everywhere around there.
There's cattle stations, there's cane growers, there's so much around there, and it's just so lush and green. It was just such a beautiful area to visit.
It's good that you can swim there.
And you can swim there, yes. You don't have to worry about the things that want to nibble on your limbs, you know, in the water, like the crocodiles and sharks and jellyfish and whatnot.
And there was actually, Finch Haddon, we found a very famous pie place.
A pie place, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just before Finch Haddon, there's a little takeaway shop.
Uh-huh.
And, they're famous for their pies. Yeah, I can't remember what the place was called. We certainly did have a pie.
Another pie place. You had a pie at one of the other places too, didn't you? In Martina
Gavin. Yeah, we did on Fraser Island.
Yes, five out of five. Guys, I think we're going to wind it up here. Where are you going to be next time we catch up and chat with you?
Well, as we said, I think last time, you know, one of the things that we've got planned is we're going to treat ourselves in the Whitsundays to a bit of a cruise out there through the islands. You know, we thought, we've allowed a little bit within the budget, you know, to be able to do some of these things.
Okay.
So we're going to treat ourselves. But on the way, we've got Cape Hillsborough as well, which we're looking forward to checking out.
Yes, okay. Cape Hillsborough.
Cape Hillsborough is the one where you can, you know, get a really nice sunrise photo with the kangaroos on the beach, you know, and whatnot. So looking forward to that one very much.
Fantastic. All right, listeners, before we finish up, what song can we play for you guys today? Because it's sounding like you've really hit summer now and you've been doing a lot of swimming up there in the gorge and enjoying the beautiful Queensland rainforest and so on and so forth. So what's a good song that we can finish up with?
Well, look, you just hit the nail on the head. You know, we're sort of almost chasing. It feels like we're chasing summer and the warm weather, because everybody we speak to down in Victoria is saying it's getting, you know, bloody cold down there, and you guys are having these beautiful swims all the time in sunny weather. So we thought, what more fitting song than
One Summer by Daryl Braithwaite.
Great selection, guys. All right, listen, I'm going to get that up for you straight away. Stay safe, okay, and keep travelling and keep us informed, because it's so wonderful to be talking to you guys. You're living the dream, and as I said right from the start when we first had you on the radio, like Martina's in her, late 20s, I think, and yep. early 30s maybe, and Dave, you're in your sort of mid-30s and you're out there, you're living the dream. Traveling, no end date, and living out of this fantastic 78 series cruiser, and I bet you got some really, really adventurous stuff coming up. Like you're definitely going to be doing the telly track,
and yes.
All right. Well, we're not at the telly track yet, but when you get there, we're going to want to hear all about it.
Certainly will. Well, thank you very much for allowing us, you know, the opportunity to share our story and our journey.
Yep.
You know, as we travel around the country, I know some people would like to do it and they potentially haven't got the opportunity or the time or other things that are in the way. So we're glad at least this way we can share this with your listeners and whoever else would like to sort of watch, follow and listen.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, David. Thank you, Martina. And
thank you, Phil.
You're very welcome. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us. And I'm going to get that song up right now, One Summer, Daryl Braithwaite, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that, listeners.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.